Good evening. Welcome to Charcoal Epistemology. My name is Travis Shaddix. Welcome. We're growing. The channel's growing. We're over 50 members, 1,300 subscribers. We've only been around for a few months, 5 or 6 months. Come join us. People are subscribing by the hundreds now. We're all trying to figure out how we know what we know about turfgrass science. That's what turfgrass epistemology is all about. And I hear from a lot of the new subscribers, as well as some of the members, I asked them, why are you joining? Like, well, we want to know what's true. We want to know. No one's doing the evidence. No one's talking about scientific papers like this. And we're bombarded with BS. And what you're talking about is evidence. It's more likely that, you know, we're wise to follow these policies and these BMPs than what we see on YouTube. So join us. It's growing. You might as well jump on board now. Welcome. It's going to be a fun night. I got a lot of stuff in store. I'm going to have to move fast. I had a good meeting on Monday with the members. If you're a member, you have access to the Monday morning show, as well as a monthly or every other month, a meeting, just a chit chat meeting with just myself and the members. It's not recorded, but on Monday morning, we do a show, the same show as I'm doing now, but it's just for members. So if you join and you go to the community tab, you'll see the link. Moving forward, it will not show up as a members only video like it did last week. It'll show up. I'll post the link in the community tab for the members for each Monday show. And I'll post the link probably on Saturday or Sunday. So it'll be there. And that's where you'll need to go to actually access the Monday morning members only stream. That'll be at 10 a.m. each Monday. Calendly is growing more and more. I didn't expect it to. If it keeps growing, I'm going to have to raise the prices, but don't worry for members. Members, it's always the same price. If you're going to do Calendly, you might as well be a pro member, because Calendly is $100, and pro members, you get a link instantly for $1. You can do one. You can do a Calendly consultation with me for $1. So if you're going to do a Calendly appointment, you might as well just be a pro member on YouTube, go to the community tab, get the Calendly $1 link for pro members and use it. And it's a wash at that point. So don't forget about that. Okay. Real quick, emails and voicemails. I went from getting about one or two or three emails a day, just as I'm more or less in retirement now, to getting about 40 or 50 a day. So I'm not going to keep up with it. I'm just letting you know. Okay. So there's two ways that you can almost guarantee that I'm going to respond in a reasonable amount of time to you. One is if you're a pro member or a member, I'm going to have to prioritize who I can reply to, because I just don't have enough time in the day. So if you're a pro member, I'm going to make a commitment to prioritize you and then members and respond to you and your emails as well. And then if you're not a pro member, you're not a member, and it's something that comes across and I have time, or if it happens to interest me and I want to sit down and reply to your email, I'll do that. But I do read the emails. I just don't always have time to reply to them. But if you're not a member, then the next best way to get me to respond or to reply to you is to leave me a voicemail on the channel's voicemail, which is 859-444-4234. If you leave a voicemail, it's always possible that I'll use that voicemail on the show and respond to your voicemail on the show live, okay? Those are the two best ways to get me to make sure that I answer your questions, is that to be a member, I'll prioritize those, or to leave me a voicemail on the channel's voicemail. If you call it, don't worry, I'm not going to answer it. It always goes straight to voicemail, and I just collect those, and then periodically I'll play one or two on the show and then answer the questions live. Okay, so that's, I wanted to make sure that I appreciate all the emails. I do my best, but I only have so much time in the day, and I'm a stay-at-home dad. So I have to, at some point, I can't answer them all. Okay, good to see everybody. We have a whole slew of new members since the last time I was on. We have Turf Stooge as a member. Mike Norris joined. Cameron, I think he's from Utah, joined. Jedi Am's a member. OG, Thomas Strong, Tutil Turf. We have members joining a lot. So I really appreciate your support of what I'm doing. And as a reminder for anybody new or considering joining and you just don't want to join ads, YouTube, but you might be interested in contributing to Turfgrass Research, after my expenses are paid for keeping the show on the air, which is not too much, Then all the additional revenue goes into turf rest research that I still conduct as a retiree. Okay. So that's what's going on with the members and all that stuff. So, next thing, I have a turf thought tonight at the end of the show that is actually verbatim what happened to me in real life. So it's not so much funny as it is like amazing. Like that would even be said. So to me, it's funny, but to you, you might watch it and go, oh, that's whatever. But it actually happened to me. And so that's the turf thought for tonight. That'll be at the end of the show. So stay around for that. And tonight I'm going to be talking about some research, and I'm going to be discussing introducing or including a current university professor and a quote from this professor and how his quote is inaccurate. And I'm going to explain why what his conclusion is inaccurate using the paper tonight. So text your friends. Is Travis going to actually go after, you know, the claims from an assistant professor? Yes, I am going to go after the claims. I'll go after the claims of anybody. Any assertion, it's fair game. So text them because it's coming up. you might not want to miss it. So that'll be coming up. And then the end music tonight. This band is putting out new music about once a month, and it keeps getting harder and grungier and nastier and dirty, and just it's a mix of like Nine Inch Nails and just a little bit of Motley Crue put in there, and some maybe even a blend of Metallica and some just Soundgarden and just grungy stuff going into this song tonight. It's a new song. It's been out for about a week. It's a little bit like when Dr. Feelgood came out in 89 after Girls, Girls, Girls in like 87. And Girls, Girls, Girls was still kind of a poppy rock, you know, hair metal album. And then Dr. Feelgood came out from Motley Crue in 89. It was just like dirty, just like really raw. And then after that, they put out Decade of Decadence a couple years later. And on that album, they had a song called Primal Scream. And it was even more grungy and just filthy. And it was just raw. That's like the song is tonight. So look forward to that at the end. I'm going to see them in September, actually, in Louisville. So I'm looking forward to that. They're playing in a music festival, this band. And the big name bands, Motley Crue. I don't know. I think Korn's playing there. All these big name bands. I'm not going to see any of them. I'm going to see this band. So that's who's playing at the end. Good evening. I'm already missing some of the chat. I'm sorry. I'm going on and on. Gray Fox, good evening. Turf Nerd Lawn Care, Zoop E891. I'm gonna be quick because I got a lot of stuff to go over tonight. Tanner Moore, Jeremy Bosch, good evening to everybody. Yeah, B Butcher, glad you're able to catch the show live as well. Any questions you have, be able to put them in the chat, and if I get a chance at the end, I'll try to go through them. I've noticed when I watch the stream back sometimes, I've noticed people ask questions and somehow I just miss it. I don't know how I miss it. So I don't intentionally avoid anybody's questions, but if you're a member, the little icon next to your name and the color, the green color of your name on the screen indicates to me that you're a member. And I'm trying to make sure I at least answer the members' questions. I don't look over them, but I'm only human. I don't know how I missed some of the questions you guys asked, but please put it in the chat and I'll do my best to address it if I can. Andrew Burris loves to see the channel grow. Grass Factor's here tonight. Reed Grevin, it's party time. Yeah. Evening Shaddocks. Yeah. For the members, I posted a video of me. I was in bed the other night. I'm sorry. I was in bed just goofing around and I saw what I thought was the video that that Matt and the guys over at Grass Factor, Ray and Ryan, were saying some stuff about somebody doing something. I don't know what it was, just goofy stuff. And I think I happened to come across it. And so I videotaped myself watching it and I posted it on the community tab for the members. And sure enough, that's what they were talking about. I never saw it until then. So it doesn't bother me if they mispronounce my name. People mispronounce my name occasionally like that. But what blew me away the most was the idea that in order to believe what I'm saying, or actually believe what I'm communicating through the evidence, I have to sell you something. It's like, what? How does that connect? Like, I mean, What I'm saying in terms of the evidence, I'm communicating the evidence in the scientific literature. I mean, you can believe it or not believe it, but this is what I'm communicating to you. And if you're going to follow it, basically what the guy was saying was, don't follow this unless he's selling you something. That's hilarious. I mean, that's great. I had to record myself and put it on the community tab. That was fantastic. I never heard anything like it in my life. So I appreciate those guys turning me on to that video. I eventually found it. That was great. I loved it. You know, if you don't want to be on the channel or have me say something, don't make me laugh. If you make me laugh, you're probably going to get put on the channel. Oh man. Andrew Burr says, I'm loving Turf Thoughts. Yeah. I don't know how you'll understand more in May after the whole May Mental Health Awareness Month comes through and all this sort of stuff. But I like creating things, sometimes it's a success, sometimes it's a flop. What are you going to do? Not everything can be a Picasso. Okay. But anything new, creative, I never poo poo on anybody trying something new, even if it just completely sucks. I'm like, hey man, try it, you know, get out there and do something different, do something unique and novel and contribute to society in a positive way, whatever it takes. And so I'm trying to do something creative at the end of the show with these Turf Thoughts. It's a complete ripoff of Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy. And I told the audience that too. And my friends in Oklahoma and I go back and forth on some of the Deep Thoughts and they'll send me some and I'll send them. It's just great. I love those old Deep Thoughts. So, all right, let me get going quickly, guys. I got to get going. So, and Brandon Kennedy reminds me, I never say this and I always forget. I don't even know why I need to say it, but he reminds me, he says, hit the like button. I don't know why I need to say that, but hit the like button. Okay, guys. All right, let's get going. I have a video, I have a PDF, and I have a little quote, and we're going to go over some stuff. And the video is going to be at the end for a reason, because it needs to be I need to show the PDF first in order for it to make sense, because it connects to the PDF. But let me show the scoreboard first for turfgrass response to biostimulants. I've changed this, and I've added in the setting column, and I removed the negative column because there's not really going to be any negative effects applying biostimulants in the literature. I haven't ever come across a negative effect like I have in potassium. So I took that out, and instead I think what's more relevant is the setting. So if it was conducted in the field or the lab or the greenhouse, I included that because it's going to line up pretty tight with where it was conducted. And I mean, not the location or the state or the person doing it, but whether it was in the field or it was in the greenhouse, that tends to be where you see differences. Okay. Or when you see something occur, it's usually in the greenhouse when it comes to to biostimulants. Okay. So the first study we went over was the Irvin 2004 study, and they didn't find anything using seaweed extract or humic acid in the field on bentgrass. And then we did Dr. Munshaw's paper last week, or it was on a Monday. I can't remember. And he used seaweed extract on Bermuda grass in Virginia. And again, they didn't find anything in the field. Okay. And today's study is going to be on humic acid or humic dry dispersible granules, as well as humic coated urea on bent grass in Iowa in the field. Okay. So for those of you who may not be in the world of science and all this other stuff, that's fine. But turf grass research, a lot of research in general will follow the following pattern. They'll start off in the laboratory because it's the cheapest and you can do the largest number of units. And then we'll move to the greenhouse. The units generally go down, but again, that we're trying to control for error and try to control the expenses. And before we ever go out in the field, usually we've already done some work in the greenhouses, so we kind of have a rough idea what's going to happen, because when we go in the field, it's very expensive. The plots are 2 by 3 meters or much larger than that in some cases, and it becomes much more labor intensive to control things out in the field. So we'll start off in the greenhouse in the laboratory. But those studies are highly controlled, and they might not necessarily represent what's going to happen in the field. Many, many, many publications will show something happens in the greenhouse, and then when you go in the field, nothing happens, or vice versa. Nothing happened in the greenhouse, but suddenly something happened in the field. So what I'm interested in is all of it as a scientist, but as a practitioner, I'm interested mostly in what happens in the field. And there will be at least one, there's probably 5 or 6 at least, but there's at least 1 or 2 that I'm going to go over on the channel before the end of the month, where they do show a positive response following the application of biostimulants to turf grass in the field. So it is possible, but those settings are specific and the stresses that the turf grass is under are specific. Okay, so be sure to keep an eye out for those. Okay, so now let me get my screen out here. Okay. Yeah, Ignacio probably is good stuff. You'll catch the replay. No problem, Ignacio. Thanks for stopping by. Okay, now let's get into the PDF because I just got so much stuff to go over. I got to go through this quickly. I'm going to show almost all the results in a PowerPoint. And, I was going to do, I'll just talk about it. I was going to do something else, but I'm going to talk about it and it'll still work out. Okay, so this PDF or this publication was from Iowa. And the title of it is Evaluation of Humic Fertilizers on Sand-Based Creeping Bentgrass Putting Greens. Now, at the end, I'm going to show a video about humic-coated ureas. And if you're not familiar with humic-coated ureas or humic fertilizers, it's been around for 5 or 10 years now. And what it is it's just a take on coated urea. So we coat ureas with sulfur coats and polymers, and we used to coat them with wax and all sorts of stuff. And it slows down the release of urea into the ecosystem. So that slower release imparts some beneficial responses in the turf. Well, they started coating it with humic compounds, with the idea being that the humic compound would actually provide some additional benefit. So that is what we're going to be talking about today, if you're unfamiliar with humic-coated ureas. All right. There's been a lot of work done on this in Iowa, most of it in the greenhouse, but this one's in the field. And this study was conducted by A.J. Lindsay, Adam Tomes, Marshall McDaniel, and Nick Christians. I had Nick on the show, as many of you know. If you don't know, go back and check out this conversation I had with Dr. Christians. If you don't know Dr. Christians, he's one of, 10 still active legends, basically, in the turfgrass industry. He's been around for ages, done bukus and bukus of work, put out a ton of really good professors. And so this is a pretty good team. And Adam Tomes is still at Iowa, and A.J. Lindsay's at Florida, and I don't know Marshall McDaniel. Okay, this was published in Crop Science in 2021, so it's hot off the press. It's only two or three years old. And I'm going to read through just real briefly an introduction because I want to get to the results, because the results are robust and it's going to take me forever to get through them. Basically, introductions are this. Sand-based root zones are often used for highly important economic areas such as sports fields and golf course putting greens. Sand is the primary component of root zones mixtures because it eliminates surface water ponding and has a high degree of particle stability. However, there are disadvantages to sand-based root zones, which include low nutrient and water retention and decreased microbial activity. All right. So for those of you who are unfamiliar, putting greens are grown on sands. Sometimes it's pure sand, like it's deemed a California spec green, or a USGA spec green is 85-15 peat, or 85% or 90% 10% peat, or something like that. And the reason for the sand is because with so much foot traffic on the putting green, it can be compacted and create a lot of problems for growth. But it's good for that. But it also doesn't retain much moisture or nutrients, and it can be challenging to grow turf grass under those settings. So he basically goes through all that. All right. I'm not going to read that. He talks about soil respiration and potential mineralizable nitrogen, because he's going to talk about that in the results. And he talks about various past research that has looked a little bit at that. Sand-based root zones are often amended with peat moss, as I mentioned, manures, compost, humic substances to improve soil properties. The old USGA spec green used to mandate that it was peat, but I think in 2004, the revision, you could use a number of different amendments, but it had to be a certain sand size fraction, and then you could be a percentage of some other amendment. But the other amendment is usually intended to increase the nutrient and moisture retention capacity of the system. Humic substances are complex and heterogeneous mixtures of materials formed by humification, which is the chemical and biochemical reactions during transformation and decay of microbial and plant remains. So for those of you who don't know what humic substances is, that's the definition they use in this paper. Humic fertilizers or soil amendments are often derived from leonardite by alkaline extraction and then separated into different fractions by acidification. Humic substances can contain humic acid, fulvic acid, and humic acid precursors. Humic products have been reported to positively affect root growth and branching, respiration and photosynthesis, nutrient uptake and nutrient use efficiency, and abiotic stress tolerances. That's a lot in there. I will say that there's plenty of evidence to support the increase in rooting, but I don't really care about that, as many of you probably know by now. I don't get paid to grow roots. I get paid to grow grass. Now, if you can convince me that the roots are going to impart some sort of, increase in drought resistance or increase in fall color retention, no problem. But show me that. In other words, roots is a means to an end. it's not the end. So if it's a means to the end, then we can use it as an explanation to explain the end. But oftentimes people will use roots and this humic acid and humic components because they almost, well, I don't know what the percentage is, but a very good likelihood that these humic products will enhance rooting. There's very little doubt about that. But that shouldn't be the end. That shouldn't be the convincing factor for you as a consumer, because that's the means to the end. All right? I want to make sure that's clear. I don't know many soil scientists who are knowledgeable or reputable. They're going to refute that humic products have been shown to increase rooting. But I don't care about that, and I hope you don't care about that. I hope what you care about is turf quality or turf density or turf growth or turf color or recuperative capacity or fall color retention or spring green up or something that our clients care about. And if our clients care about roots, then I care about roots. But it should be, and it is, roots are a means to an end, not the end, all right? Okay. The mode of action of humic substances has been speculated as a biostimulant effect or hormone-like or auxin-like activity. Now, you will see this consistently throughout almost all of the humic acid literature, is that very few, in fact, I don't even know of one, but I'm sure someone can pull one up. Welcome, Charlie Willis, to the membership. Thank you for your membership. Appreciate it. I challenge someone to actually find one and post it. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm saying I can't find one. You'll be hard to find a humic acid research project or study that actually did a full nutrient analysis of the humic acid. And the reason I mention that is because humic acids can and often do include phosphorus or have a direct impact with phosphorus. Okay, and oftentimes we're looking at the nitrogen component of the, you know, any nutrient that might bias our data, we're looking at nitrogen. But in this case, there could be other elements like, who knows what, iron or phosphorus or something like that. And there's many publications that have shown that that phosphorus can be elevated in some types of humic acid, human or humus, or there's a lot of different species of this humic acid, if you want to call it that, or humus, okay. But you'll almost never see our products contain this much phosphorus. So the study we did also applied this much phosphorus. Therefore, we balanced it out using such and such amount of phosphorus. You'll hardly ever see that. Okay. Humic products claim numerous benefits to turf grass plant and soil health, including enhanced microbial activity. And I'm going to show you a podcast that one of the members turned me on to. Thank you. And I think it was, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Cameron told me about it. And I went and listened to it. I'm like, man, that is gold. If that was a video, it would be on my channel right now. But they're talking about adding humic acids for microbial activity and increasing microbial growth and all this stuff to enhance soil health and all these things. And you'll see in this paper, we're going to find out in this paper exactly what happened in terms of microbial activity. Okay. So humic products claim numerous benefits, enhance microbial activity, increase nutrient availability. That was also in that podcast. And uptake efficiency, improve stress tolerances. There's a little bit there in the literature. I'll agree with that. Increased fertilizer effectiveness and efficiency and improve soil structure and water holding capacity. However, these claims are largely unfounded. I agree with that. Okay. With some exceptions and need further investigation or field evaluation. So that we hypothesize. So this is the way to write a sentence or a hypothesis, people, just so you know. But sometimes we meander around this stuff. These guys didn't, which is good. We hypothesize that incorporating humic substances with nitrogen fertilizer will allow for reducing the nitrogen rates while maintaining turf grass quality by enhancing turf grass nitrogen use efficiency. Now, I'm going to read this again. And the flaw in the professor's conclusion is a very deep level of critical thinking that it requires a deep level of critical thinking to pull out that flaw. Okay. So I'm going to read this again. And at the end, I'm going to mention something I'm just mentioning that to say that it's understandable why someone would not necessarily catch it, including a professor. Okay, let me read this again. We hypothesize that incorporating humic substances with nitrogen fertilizer will allow for reducing the nitrogen rates, while turf grass, while maintaining turf grass quality by enhancing turf grass nitrogen use efficiency. So they're talking about reducing nitrogen by including a humic substance without altering or having a negative impact on turf quality. This study was, the hypothesis was that, but the study treatments, the structure of the study itself, it was not designed correctly to answer that question. And I'm going to show exactly what I mean when we get to, you know, towards the end with the results. Okay. Okay, so I'll just read the objectives real quick. The objectives of this field-based experiment were to determine if incorporating humic substances to fertilizers allows for a reduction of nitrogen while maintaining turf grass quality, and to determine if the addition of humic substances to fertilizers increases turf grass soil microbial biomass and activity. So very straightforward. The objectives or the hypothesis must be falsifiable. So hypotheses and objectives that are written, like our objective was to determine the rate of nitrogen. Well, I mean, that's, you can't falsify that. Okay. That goes back to all the Karl Popper's papers, and that's, you know, the whole scientific structure of how we do things. But these can be falsified. In other words, we can determine whether or not it didn't happen, right? Or it did happen one way or the other. All right, let's get to it. A 2-year study from April 2019 to November 2020, a field experiment was conducted on a mature 10-year-old pincross creeping bentgrass putting green in Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa. The putting green root zone is a sand-based root zone, USGA spec. So for those golf course superintendents listening, that's the setting. Oh, B. Butcher, thank you for your membership. Appreciate it. Roberto Gonzalez says Uncle Al or the doc. No, neither one. Neither one tonight. It's a new... Nothing on them tonight on the videos. So Michael Comer says, wouldn't more roots automatically improve turf quality? That was in the text here. Let me read this before we go too far in the materials and methods. Well, that's the question. Would more roots equal turf grass quality? So here, I'll pose a hypothetical to you. Let's say you had perfect, I'm not saying this would ever happen, but let's just say hypothetically that you had perfect turf for 3 straight years. Everything's perfect. You fertilize correctly, you weed correctly, everything's good. Everybody's happy. No problems at all. And someone comes along and says, hey, you should take a soil sample and take a look at your roots. And you do that. And you find out, hypothetically, that there's no roots below 1 inch, zero, on, say, tall fescue that should have, you know, 3, 4, 5 inch deep roots or deeper. There's no roots below 1 inch. And you start worrying, oh my gosh, we should, you know, something's wrong. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong. The turf grass is fine. I said, the turf grass is fine. It's been fine for 3 years. Everybody's happy. Okay. So the connection is oftentimes made. More roots equals healthier turf grass. And clearly there's evidence to support that. But that doesn't always be, that's not always the case. And what I'm trying to get people to focus on is focus on roots being an end, the means to an end. Roots are the means to the end. When you pull up, when anybody pulls up to Miss Jones or pulls up to the pro's office door at your golf course, or the coach's door and talking about the field, when anybody there says, hey, you need to show me how many roots I got below the soil, when anybody tells me that actually happened, I'll be shocked. Okay. I've never heard of that happening. What they care about is quality turf, performing turf. And yes, there's a strong relation between that and turf grass. I mean, between that and roots. But when it comes to determining whether or not a product has a beneficial impact on turf, what will normally happen is, well, more roots equals more drought resistance, or more roots equals more nutrient uptake. Then show me that. Show me the drought resistance. Show me the nutrient uptake. Show me something that I care about, and then use the roots as a means to explain that. That's sort of my position on these issues. Grass Factor says, wait, I fell for this study. Okay. It says, would you have to compare the higher end rates applied with humic acid against the lower end rates without humic acid as well?
Yes.
Don't steal my thunder. Establish an actual comparison of the two end rates and then add humic acid and compare against the non-humic acid response. Don't steal my thunder, Matt. Okay. We'll get to that. You're hitting it on the head. Okay. So I'm getting to that real quick. Okay. Let me go on. I got to get going. It's already 9:30. I got to get going. I got to move quicker. By the way, if you guys ever want to know, I'm not going to be able to get this all on the screen here, but if you ever want to see or just go through like a really good literature review of the existing humic acid literature, this table one does a really good job at that. And you can see all the references over on the right, the Cooper 98. And we're going to go over a lot of these. And I mentioned Zhang and Irvin did a lot of papers in the early 2000s. That's what I'm talking about. All these Zhang and Irvin papers. We're going to go over a lot of these papers. Okay. We've already gone over some of them. Okay. So there's just a slew of papers and the literature review they have here that you can guys more than happy to go through and read those. I'm going to go over quite a few of them, but not all of them. Okay, the treatments. Okay, here's the treatments. The treatments. Treatments include a humic acid urea it's going to be denoted at HCU at 2/3 the rate and full rate. And that was by the Andersons. And this study, by the way, and I'll go all the way to the end real quick, just so we're clear. It says the conflict of interest in accordance with the Crop Science Society of America policy and our ethical obligations as researchers, we are reporting that we received funding from a company that may be affected by the research reported in the closed paper. We have disclosed these interests fully to the Crop Science Society of America, and we have in place an approved plan for managing any potential conflicts arising from the involvement. So what they're saying is this study was funded most likely from the Andersons, just so you know, okay? And they tell you. They're not hiding anything. They're telling you. Okay. So that was the humic coated urea 2/3 and a full rate. Then there was a humic coated urea plus this HDG humic dispersible granules, also by the Andersons. And then humic coated urea plus black gypsum, and that was also by the Andersons. And then urea, just straight urea, and then just the humic dry granule alone, and then a non-treated control. So if, for those of you watching, you can see all the treatments here. We have a humic coated urea, and then we have 2/3 the rate of nitrogen with humic coated urea. And then we have urea, and you know all the treatments are here. Okay, and the rates of nitrogen that they went out with. See, I'm going to look this up. I'm going to actually read it out of the text because for some reason it's not connecting. This must have been like the single application rates, which would be like, where's the calculator? So that would be like, it's like a little over a tenth of a pound of N, but I'm going to read it out of the materials and methods so I get it absolutely correct the way they wrote it. Applications were made with a wooden box with three sets of offset wiring. If you've never seen it, we used to make these boxes that have basically the equivalent of like chicken wire in there, and there's different layers. And then when you spread the fertilizer, and the box is exactly the dimensions of the plot. And then when you spread these small amounts of fertilizer over that area, it's like the Plinko game on Price is Right. It kind of jiggles around there, and it really nicely distributes the fertilizer evenly over that area. And that's what they did, it sounds like. Urea was applied at 102.5 kilograms, so that was like a little over 2 pounds of N per year. And that's basically what they're going to do, except for the 2/3 pounds of nitrogen. So the humic-coated urea was also applied at a little over 2 pounds of N per year. And the humic-coated 2/3 rate was applied at, 2/3 of 2 pounds, so 1.4 pounds per year. Okay, so this is the 2/3 rate that they're going to, at the end, claim that you can reduce the amount of nitrogen as long as you're including a humic product. And I'm going to explain why that's not possible to determine in this setup. They were applied every 2 weeks from April to October. The humic dry granule is applied at, it looks like, almost 5 pounds per 1,000 square feet per year in April, May, and September. And then the black gypsum was applied at, 10 pounds, 439 divided by, at 9 pounds. 9 pounds per 1,000 per year was applied in April, July, and October in 2019 and 20. So that's the setup, okay? Now here's the yearly application. Oh, here you go. Yeah, I'm sorry, in table one. So I'm sorry, table two. So they had the application rates, and then they did the yearly totals. And you can see it's basically 2 pounds and then 2/3 of 2 pounds. And then you can see the nitrogen here is 2 pounds, 2 pounds, 2 pounds. So they had the nitrogen all set, And then they had a treatment with humic-coated in there, and they reduced the nitrogen on that treatment. I'm going to come back to this, or I'll probably just explain it in the tables when I get to it. Data collection. Visual quality ratings were on 1 to 9, with 6 was minimal acceptable. Digital images were collected every other week. And by the way, for our researchers and grad students listening, the word bi-weekly is ambiguous because it could mean every 2 weeks or it could mean twice weekly. So you need to make sure that it's written correctly, because I can't tell. I'm assuming this is every 2 weeks because it's a putting green. But when you say bi-weekly, there's two different definitions of that. And so you need to say once every 2 weeks or twice weekly instead of using the term bi-weekly. It's not scientifically appropriate to use that. Anyway, digital images were subject to digital analysis and calculated per, and they were used to calculate the percent green cover. We keep going. All right, so we're going to scoop through this. I'm going to show all these tables in PowerPoint, and I'm going to go there right now. Yeah. Okay, so all these are in a PowerPoint. I'm going to go to that real quick, and then I will we'll keep going. So PowerPoint. Okay. Now, the PowerPoint treatment effect on pencross creeping bentgrass quality in 2019. So this was the average of the year. And on the y-axis, we have turf grass quality from 1 to 9. On the x-axis, we have all the treatments. Humic-coated urea at the two-thirds rate, humic-coated urea plus the humic dry granule, the addition of humic dry granule, or humic-coated urea with black gypsum, or just straight urea, or just the humic dry granule by itself or non-treated, okay? So Andrew Burris asks, you know, this question comes up, Andrew, and you're not the only one. I guess I'm going to have to sit down and address it at some point. The question is, how do they determine visual quality? Okay, so the best explanation I can give is actually from the NTEP ratings paper that they give researchers. On the back of that, they'll have a series of criteria used to rate the plots. And it's a series of evaluations by the eye performed in a certain fashion. But it includes turf grass color, turf grass density. It includes a number of different characteristics of the turf that you consider, including species color. No, it's what is there's it's just turf grass color, but oh, genetic color. There's genetic color, and they describe exactly how to go through it. Okay, it has to be taken at a certain time of day. It has to be taken with the light behind you. There's a whole series of things we go through when we're trying to do turf grass quality. Okay, so I would encourage you to go to National Turf Grass Evaluation Program. I think it's ntep.org. And I think you can maybe even download one of their documents. And on the back of it, they'll usually have an explanation of how to take a turf grass quality rating. But I'll probably go over on the channel because so many people ask that same question. Okay, I'm going to keep going. All right. So now we're looking at all the treatments on the x-axis, turf grass quality on the y-axis, and it's the treatment effect of pencross creeping bentgrass quality in 2019. Okay, so now here we go. Any bar under the same line, the same type of line, is statistically the same. So all the treatments were the same except for the humic dry granule and the non-treated were the same. They were the same as each other, but they were less than the other plots. 6 was the minimum, and you can see that all the treated turf grass was acceptable, except from the non-treated turf and from the humic dry granule alone. So what this is saying is turf grass that received just the humic dry granule alone provided no additional benefit compared to non-treated turf grass. That was in 2019, okay? Oops, okay. So but you'll notice the urea is 6.8 and everything else is 6.9, 7, 6.8. They're all the same as urea. So the average across the year in 2019, there was no additional benefit from adding something to urea, okay? Now in 2020, this is the average for the year, 2020, same exact setup, just next year, we see that the actual, the humic dry granule and the non-treated turf grass, they were also the least, they were 5.3 and 5.5, okay. The urea, the humic coated urea with black gypsum, humic coated urea, humic dry granule, and the humic coated urea applied at the normal 2 pound per year rate were all the same. But the humic coated urea at the two-third rate was less at 7, still perfectly acceptable. But the difference between 7 and 7.5, I mean, the average person is probably not going to see that, but you might be able to pull that out with the eye. But it was less when you average it across the year than just urea. So you're applying two-thirds the rate of urea, and you're getting a lower response on average across the year. All right. Make sure that's clear. And make sure I get this. Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't have that on. I apologize. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't have that on there, guys. So this is what I'm talking about. So the humic dry urea at 2/3 the rate was less than the urea and the humic coated urea and the humic coated urea and all the other stuff. Okay. Then the humic dry granules and the non-treated were down here at the bottom. I'm sorry, but did I have the other graph on too? Maybe I skipped the other graph too. I'm sorry, guys. If I'm trying to keep a track of like two or three screens here. This is the first year, and then this is the second year. Okay. So we're seeing the quality decline, perhaps as a result of deprived nitrogen in this 2/3 rate treatment. Maybe it's not. Maybe it'll come up the next year. Maybe it continues to decline if you continue to take data. But we clearly see a reduction on the on average when you're applying less nitrogen, even when you're including humic coating in it. Okay, now this is the turf quality right out of the paper, week to week. Okay, and we have all the treatments. We have all the treatments, and we have week to week from 0 to week 30. And the visual quality on the y-axis, and you'll see this humic dry granule and the non-treated clearly separate themselves out. I don't think they were ever acceptable. They were very unacceptable the entire time. And then all the other treatments were the same, basically. They're basically the same. Urea and all the other humic-coated urea products follow in line, right along line. Now, the 2/3 rate right here is the square. And you'll see here the square right here at week 24, 25, it tends to be a little bit on the lower end. This is probably why it pulled out as average on the year. You see it tends to be on the bottom, but it all kind of lined up with all the other treatments more or less. But it tended to be kind of towards the bottom. And the urea was the diamond, and it all gets mixed up in here because they're all the same. Okay. So what that's saying is that week to week, there really wasn't much difference between any of these humic-coated products compared to just urea, okay? But, and I'm going to read this quote exactly, okay, because I don't want to misquote him. A professor at a major university is looking at this graph at a national meeting and said the following: "It does seem like there is a potential to decrease some of our fertilizer usage by adding in some humic products." And what he's saying is that because this two-thirds humic acid, two-thirds nitrogen humic acid treatment was consistent in quality with the urea, which was applied at the full rate, we should be able to reduce our nitrogen rate if we included humic acid. Okay. Let me put this back on the screen. We should be able to reduce our nitrogen if we included humic acid because the 2/3 rate of nitrogen with humic acid was comparable to all the other treatments that included the full rate of nitrogen. Now, as I said at the beginning, this likely requires a fairly deep level of critical thinking to pull this out and understand why the professor was wrong in making that conclusion, or making that assertion, I should say. It is true that 2/3 the rate of nitrogen with humic coated urea, or as humic coated urea, did compare favorably to a full rate of urea. That is true. But you cannot say that you could potentially reduce the urea if you included humic acid, because there was no 2/3 rate nitrogen applied. In other words, if you just applied 2/3 the rate of nitrogen with no humic acid, the same thing might have occurred. So you can't compare this treatment right here, the humic acid at 2/3, to urea and say that you can just reduce the urea. You can't say that. Okay. You can say that if this urea also was applied at 2/3 the rate and you saw that the urea at 2/3 the rate fall well below the quality, and the urea at 2/3 the rate with humic acid maintain the same quality as all the other treatments, then you could say that. But you cannot make that comparison and say, well, you can make the comparison because it was a treatment. You compare the treatments. But you can't say we can reduce, we very likely can reduce the amount of nitrogen as long as you apply it with some humic acid or humic coated urea. Can't say that. Okay. So you were right on target there, Matt, if he's still in the chat. So it requires a fair amount of, I don't know, critical thinking, but I mean, you have to be able to understand the scientific experimental design and model and understand what you can and can't say. And in this particular case, unfortunately, this professor is continuing to go around and say this at national meetings, and it's not true. You can't say it. It may be, in fact, true that you can reduce the nitrogen. That may actually be true, but there's no evidence in this paper to support that assertion. Okay? Go to the next graph, and you'll see this is cover. So green cover percentage. Now, this was taken with a light box in a digital image, and you'll see that, again, the humic dispersible granule in untreated turf grass performed very poorly at the end and at the beginning. They performed very poorly, but the urea and all the other treatments, the humic-coated urea, the two-thirds rate, all this other stuff, black gypsum, everything, all compared very favorably in terms of green color. There was no differences throughout the bulk of the study, and then there was a few differences at the very, very end and at the couple at the very, very beginning, but nothing differed from urea. Okay. So the addition of, I'm sorry, I keep messing up on this PowerPoint. My mind's going all over creation. The addition of humic acid or humic coated product to urea in this case did not result in at least in any meaningful sense, a consistent benefit to you. Okay. I mean, you can see right here, urea, which is the diamond, okay? This is not statistically significant, but this is certainly biologically significant. At around week 7 was 80% green cover, and the next closest one was 70%, but some of them were down in 60%. Now, you're going to see that biologically. You're going to see a difference between 80% green cover and 60, okay? Or even this two-thirds rate. This two-thirds rate was 65 right here. And the urea was up at 80. You're going to see a difference between 65% green cover and 80% green cover. So while it's not statistically significant, it'd be very easy for me to argue that that is biologically a benefit from just applying straight urea on this particular week. But the rest of it, you don't see a whole lot of difference between all the other treatments and green cover. Okay. Let's go to treatment. I've got a whole lot more. I got to keep going. Treatment effects on compaction. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Let me get to the PDFs. One of the most important things about this paper is not even actually in the paper. Let me show you this. So just in case you guys ever happen to be reading things, and I just highlight some stuff. This is all the same stuff I just went over. If you happen to be reading things and you come across in the text, this right here, if you come across in the text something that says this, it says table S1. Now this paper, by the way, is open access. Anybody can go download it. And it says turf grass health treatments did not have an effect on soil moisture, compaction, phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, calcium, zinc concentration, pH, or CEC, table S1. What that means is a supplementary table. Now, in my opinion, one of the most important things in this paper isn't even in the paper. It's in the supplementary file. So go download the supplementary file and you'll find these data. Okay, these data right here is what I'm going to go over in the supplementary file. And this has to do with compaction, because I've heard this a lot where, oh, it's spring and it's all wet and everything's all gummed up and it's all tight and the soil's got it's too compacted. We got to apply humic acid to break up the soil or whatever. So it's just crazy stuff. And in this particular study, they measured soil compaction. Okay, and what did they find? Soil compaction, all the treatments on the bottom, and soil compaction in kilopascals on the y-axis. And we find, of course, nothing affected soil compaction. Urea is all the same as everything else. Non-treated, nothing, even the non-treated was the same compaction of the soil compared to all the other treatments, including all the gypsums and all the humic acids and everything else. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, the grass factor, Matt says, but gypsum fixes compacted soil. Yeah. Yeah, gypsum is, I'll go into that in great detail at some point in the future. Okay. Gypsum is good for two things, basically. I'll just sum it up real quick. Gypsum is great for two things. If you have sodic soils or you have sodic toxicities and you're trying to remove the sodium, or if you have sulfate deficiencies, besides those two, it's hard. I'm hard pressed to find any benefit to applying gypsum. But anyway, okay, keep going. Compact. So the next one's on Malic 3P. Now notice this, guys. Watch this. There's more than one lesson to learn on this Malic 3 phosphorus graph. This is again in the supplementary file. You won't even find it in the main file. Treatment effect on Malic 3 phosphorus. Now remember, I just listened to a podcast all this morning about the nutrients are locked up, and you got to apply this humic acid. It's going to release all these locked up nutrients. Okay. We're going to look at all these nutrients. We're going to look at phosphorus. We're going to look at potassium. We're going to look at all these nutrients. And all these nutrients, they're supposedly locked up. Humic acid is supposed to help unlock that. It's going to provide, carbon for the microbes, and the microbes are going to help break it down, or who knows what sort of magical gymnastics these people pull out. But in this particular study, we're going to see what they did with what happened with malic 3 phosphorus when they applied humic coated urea and humic dry granules and urea and all this stuff. And wouldn't you know it, nothing was different even compared to the non-treated. But look at this. Remember, the quality was acceptable from all the treatments except the non-treated and the humic dry granule. Okay? It was acceptable. There were sevens, 7.3 or something in some cases. From urea, from humic coated urea, they're all acceptable. And look at the phosphorus levels. 11, 10, 12, malic 3 phosphorus. We're going to get into it at some point. I mean, I haven't even got into the really interesting things that I'm interested in. That's the soil testing and stuff. I haven't got into that yet, and I'm 6 months into this channel. 100-something episodes of this stuff. I haven't even got into it yet. But look how low these phosphorus levels are. And the turf was perfectly acceptable. Okay? So don't get caught up in these numbers that you got to get, 30, 40 parts per million phosphorus or whatever. I mean, if you're in between 10 and 20, you're probably fine. You don't really start to see differences in phosphorus and in normal situations until you get down in the single digits. I would never want to be in the single digits. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't want to be down there in single digits on phosphorus. But if you're in 20s, 30s, I mean, every now and then you'll find some sort of strange situation where you see a benefit to applying phosphorus in those settings. But normally you never will. And this is a perfect example how turf grass, creeping bent grass grown at 10 to 12 all looked perfectly fine. Okay, sevens. Let's go to the next one. Malic 3 potassium. Same thing. Now we're looking at potassium. Nothing differed. So these humic coated ureas aren't unlocking any nutrients. Okay, there's no magical product that's going to suddenly unlock a bunch of nutrients, at least not in this study. I'll say that, not in this study. Okay, now we're going to look at magnesium. Nothing happens. Even compared to the non-treated turf. Non-treated. Still no difference in magnesium. Let's look at calcium. Now we're applying, don't forget, we're applying black gypsum. All right? So we're applying a calcium source. Let's see what happens. Nothing happens. Now, the black gypsum did probably, it didn't really even biologically stand out, but it tended to be the highest one. But they're all the same. All the same. Nothing happened. It's going to go right through that putting green. Why is the calcium not sticking around? Because it's going to go right through that putting green. We're dealing with sands. Okay? It's going to go right through. Can only hold so much. Sulfur, there was some hanging around. A little bit of extra sulfur from the black gypsum. But again, look at the numbers. Now, I haven't gone over this because I haven't published it yet, but I've ran sulfur calibrations and correlations on Kentucky bluegrass, not on bentgrass. And it's really hard for me to see a response when I get above 7. It's not easy. It's usually less than 7. And here you have bentgrass in Iowa, perfectly acceptable at 7, 8, and 9. Single digits. But 7, 8, and 9. So that's the reason I tell people, if you're in the double digits with sulfur, you're probably fine. If you're in the single digits, you need to keep an eye on it. But usually the 7 is the cliff. And I'm going to show you whenever I get that published, and I'm waiting on some data to come in. Whenever I get the sulfur stuff published, it'll come in and you'll see that the calibration shows that the 7 is when it drops off. 7, and then it's just a steep cliff from 6 to 5, and the turf quality starts to decline. And here you can see here again, more information indicating that 7, 8, and 9 are probably fine. I really personally wouldn't want to be down that low, but you can be down that low in this setting, and it did not affect the turf quality. Okay. Zinc, no difference. pH. So the pH, we're dealing with gypsum and we're dealing with all sorts of stuff. No difference in pH. It's all 7.4s and 7.3s. And CEC, the idea that you're going to have some sort of, you know, profound impact on CEC by applying humic products is hogwash. In this study, that provided no evidence of that. The idea being you're applying humic substances and there's going to be some CEC and it's going to change the all these magical things in the soil. It may, but in this study, they found no evidence to support that. Okay. And that's it on the results. So let me go back to the PDF. I have some more things I want to finish up real quick on the PDF and see if I can get through this and get to the fun stuff. Okay. The couple things. Now, remember, the one of the objectives was to determine microbial biomass, microbial activity as well. Okay. And they measured that through microbial biomass, carbon and microbial biomass, nitrogen, as well as two other things I'm going to show you in a second on the next table. I didn't put this in a figure because it's just easier to show this way. The important thing here is to know that the urea treatment is right here. And I added on the least significant, the LSD, least significant difference. I added it on and subtracted it from. So any value between 244 and 358 in this column is means it's the same as urea. And you'll notice all the treatments are the same as urea. So there was no benefit in microbial biomass carbon in 2019 compared to just straight urea. And the same thing occurred in 2020. There was no benefit in terms of microbial biomass carbon compared to straight urea. In 2019, there actually was no difference. They noted that as non-significant. And with microbial biomass nitrogen, it was also the same, no differences. And then in 2020, the urea resulted in 63 milligrams per kilogram of microbial biomass carbon. And then you add on the LSD and you subtract the LSD and you'll notice that there was no treatment that differed from urea. Okay. And if you notice the carbon to nitrogen ratio, where you think you'd be adding humic acid, it's increasing microbial activity and increasing all this soil health parameters, and it'd be increasing the carbon relative to nitrogen. You'll see here that they included that seed-in ratio, and there was no difference in any of the carbon to nitrogen ratio. So, in other words, the humic acid, humic coated products, humic dispersible granules, all these products are having no measurable impact on microbial biomass carbon or microbial biomass nitrogen in putting greens. And it says treatment five or table five. Well, I'll just read table five here. Is that, let me get back to this. Hang on. I'm just keep messing up. Okay. If you didn't see it, I'm sorry if I didn't have that on the screen, but here it is. Okay. These numbers here is what I was talking about. Treatments did not have an effect on the potentially mineralizable carbon, which I'm going to get to in a minute. Humic substances incorporated with fertilizers appear to have no effect on potentially mineralizable carbon. Now, that's what he's talking about is this here, potentially mineralizable carbon. That gives, it's the same, it's another measure of microbial, not activity. It's another measure of microbiology in the soil. And so the potentially mineralizable carbon and potentially mineralizable net nitrogen, there was no difference in the carbon among any treatments. And then the potentially mineralizable net nitrogen, you add on and subtract from this value, the LSD, and you'll notice that there's no treatment that differed from the urea. Okay. There's no value. The 7.6 here, the LSD requires that the values are greater than the LSD. And this value 7.6 is equal to this LSD. So these two values are the same. This black gypsum and urea are the same. So there's no difference in any of the soil parameters compared to urea. Okay. Which is what I'm interested in, is what's compared to urea. Okay. We're getting down to the conclusions and we're done. We only got four or five more paragraphs. They're tiny. Overall, incorporating humic substances with nitrogen fertilizer had minimal effect on soil physical and chemical properties besides the soil sulfur. Pretty straightforward. Humic substances incorporated with reduced nitrogen fertilizers provided similar turf grass quality and cover without reducing clipping biomass compared with full in rates. Now, that is what this particular professor is saying at these national meetings. However, in this conclusion, the next sentence is the most important sentence. And it says, however, the similar performance of the humic coated urea at the 2/3 rate to the full rate of urea could be due to the lack of a two-third rate of urea for comparison. That's the most important sentence. So these authors clearly understand that they didn't include a two-third rate control. And so the response could be due just to that. The inclusion of humic acid or humic coated on the urea may have nothing to do with it at all. But they don't know because they didn't include a two-third control. It is what it is. Okay? We can't treat everything. We can't measure everything. The addition of humic substances to fertilizers did not increase turf grass quality, cover, and clipping biomass compared to fertilizers alone. In conclusion, humic products incorporated with nitrogen fertilizer did not improve turf grass quality, cover, and clipping biomass relative to nitrogen fertilizer alone. So, that's a lot. But basically, the summary is in the field, in the putting green, in Ames, Iowa, on bent grass, if you're going to pay more for humic-coated urea, which I can assure you, you will pay more for humic-coated urea than you will straight urea, there's essentially no evidence in this paper that there's any benefit to doing that on bent grass putting greens in Ames, Iowa. And there's no evidence to indicate that you could actually reduce the amount of nitrogen you're applying because of the oversight on the treatment controls. I mean, like I said, you can't put in 40 treatments. I mean, at some point you got to call it, and it is what it is. Okay. The quick questions before I go to the video. Lawn Radiant says, Grass Factor, gypsum lowers soil pH. Come on now. I don't know what you mean, Lawn Radiance, but gypsum will lower soil pH in sodic soils if the sodic soil is above 8.3 pH. Gypsum has very little benefit except in sodic soils and sulfate deficient soils. But gypsum is a neutral salt, and it has no effect on pH except in sodic soils. Oh, thanks, Chuck Benzing. It's a gifted one turf grass epistemology membership. Oh, you gifted it to Ignacio. He'll love that. Yeah, I think he might have had to step out tonight, but he's here a lot. He'll love that. Thank you so much, Chuck. I appreciate that. I'm sure he does too. Grass Factor, Matt says, do I know who designed the study? I do not. You can read here in the author's contribution, and it says, it has them all on there. It has all the authors on there in terms of the methodology. So it puts them all. I don't know who actually did it, but Dr. Tomes and Christians were on there as well. So I imagine it was a combination of, I think he was Dr. Tomes' graduate student. I don't know if Nick was his chair. I think Adam was his chair. So I suspect it was probably in collaboration primarily with Dr. Tomes, but I could be wrong. I don't really know, Matt. I guess I could ask him. And Kevin B says, I tried humic-coated urea. I saw no differences on Bermuda grass. Yeah, we just want to be careful with that, Kevin, because we can try these products and see no response when there actually could be, and we can try them and see no response when there could be, or see a response when it's not from that. It's the reason I'm not a fan of people doing their own research, because unless you have an understanding of how to conduct it properly, you can be convinced for bad reasons. I'm not saying you didn't see what you saw. I'm just saying we just want to be careful with that. You know, we want to be careful with observations. We want to use observations for exactly what they are. They initiate the scientific process. The first thing we do in the scientific process, I'm sure you all know this, is we make an observation. So they're critical. They're absolutely critical for the scientific process. But it's not something that I would base a management practice off of or a conclusion off of. Okay, I would. It's kind of odd because you're seeing this in the field all the time, but you may be convinced that it's true, and you go, well, hey, Travis, I'm seeing this every day. I'm pretty convinced that when I do this, this is going to happen. It's very easy to understand why that's the case in many people's position, but it's very difficult to convince them otherwise. But we have to remember, for the majority of the human species existence, most humans have believed that the Earth is flat because from everywhere we look, it looks flat. It's only in the last several hundred years that clearly we've determined it's not flat. But the majority, if you had said that 2,000 years ago, probably would have got killed. You know, I mean, people thought you were crazy. Because everybody, I'm seeing this. This got to be true. I'm seeing this. You know, everybody's looking at it. Everybody's seeing the same thing. It's flat. Indeed, it wasn't flat. But your observations can be wrong. That's what I'm getting at. Okay. So let's go to a video. Real quick, Mike, you're a member. I'm going to make a point of responding to members. I'm trying not to oversee any member questions. It says, Mike Conroy says, would these findings most likely be the same on fescue and other species? So I'm going to give the scientific answer and I'm going to give the pragmatic answer. Scientifically, we cannot easily take these results and compare them outside the boundaries of the methodology. So I would say you can't use the results from this study and say much about another grass in another location. It's very difficult to do that. Pragmatically, I would say there's a good chance that you'll probably see the same results as long as it's somewhat similar setting. We're going to find in Colorado, on fairways in Colorado that are under salt stress, the application of these humic substances actually did impart some benefit. Okay, it's usually only when the turf grass is under specific types of stress that we see a benefit from applying humic acid. One second. Okay, so, but we'll get to that. Okay, we'll get to that paper. I think there's two papers. Okay, let me close that out, and I will get to the... trying to get to the internet here. Oh, okay, here we go. Okay, so, I want to show this at the end as a means to express the importance of professors and students and you all, everybody, whoever, doing our best to communicate the evidence as it is found and not trying to sugarcoat it. Okay, not trying to be tiptoe around the data because you don't want to offend a sponsor. Okay, tiptoeing around data because you don't want to offend a sponsor, you're afraid they're not going to fund your next study, it can have consequences. I'm going to show this video because if we continue to say in this particular case, I'm convinced, I'm almost convinced, that this particular vendor is regurgitating the information that was he heard from a particular professor on this research. Okay, but if you read the research critically, like we just did, there's several other papers by this team. This is not the only paper, but this is the field study. If you read it like we just did, you'll realize, you can't say that. Okay, so let's get the video. This video comes from, this comes from Golfdom Magazine. And I'm going to introduce it a little bit. It's a video at a trade conference where the magazine, I'm assuming the magazine editor or whoever it was going around and interviewing people. And they happened to stop by a booth that sells humic-coated urea. And we're going to be talking, who's going to be talking is either the sales manager or the product manager for the Andersons, who's going to be talking about humic-coated ureas. And listen carefully to what he's saying. With the he'll say things like two-thirds. He'll say things like three-quarters. Now, we didn't go over the three-quarter rate study. There's another study in the field that was done in Iowa that used a three-quarter rate nitrogen as well as this study using a two-thirds. So listen to these things, and you'll catch on that he's talking about these studies, okay? So listen up.
Let's start with PCHCU. That involves our humic technologies. So if you're familiar with our humic technologies, what that allows us to do is use lower overall nitrogen rates throughout the growing season. So we have to apply less fertilizer to get the same result. So even if we apply 2/3 or 3/4 our normal nitrogen rate, we're going to get the same overall turf grass quality, color, and performance that you're used to with your standard nitrogen rates.
Okay. So you heard it right there. I mean, this person is convinced. I'm assuming he's convinced. I'm assuming he's an honest man. He's, even though he's wrong, I'm assuming that he's really convinced. And he really believes that you can do this. You can reduce your nitrogen to 2/3 the rate, and as long as you include their humic coated product on, or coating on there, and still get the same response. And I just told you, I read a quote from the professor. It seems like there's potential to decrease some of our fertilizer usage by adding in some humic products. That's what he's saying. And what I'm saying is that might be true, but it's not from that study. And he's saying that specific to that study. And when you say these things and it's not accurate, the repercussions are this, where you have people at trade shows convincing people, yeah, well, University ABC State found this and you can reduce your nitrogen as long as you're buying this humic coated product. Okay. Let's continue a little bit more.
So another benefit of our poly-coated, humic-coated urea is that it offers a very extended release curve. So with our normal coated ureas, we're looking at a 4 to 6 week release. With this new version of poly-coated and humic-coated, we're looking at a 10 to 12 week release curve. So we get a nice uptick in nitrogen release over 10 to 12 weeks as opposed to the 4 to 6. So this allows superintendents to go out with fewer applications, but still get the same benefit to their course and their turf grass.
Now we showed, they showed, the paper showed, I'll go back to it right here. They showed the release over time. And let's see if I can get this open. It's right here. He's talking about it being a six, whatever he said, 6 to 10 to 12 week release. And you can see, now this is, they're applying this onto a putting green. It's a little bit different than a fairway in terms of the amount you'd apply. But you can see urea is doing just fine. It's doing just fine. And their product isn't releasing any different in terms of the turf grass response to it. Now, maybe this wasn't polymer coated. Maybe the, I don't know. Okay, but I'm just saying that urea, the times when we've conducted studies with polymer coated ureas, with reacted ureas, with organic products, and we do it accurately, it is exceedingly rare that anything outperforms urea. And that is proven time after time after time. And I've told this story before where I have a friend in the university, and he'll tell the sponsors coming in that want to do research and nitrogen, and they'll tell him, if you want your product to shine, don't put in urea. Don't put urea in as a comparative product, because the chances are not good that it would outperform urea. And that's what I've seen too. That's what the research will confirm. Okay. Finish this up. We just have a little bit more. In fact, there's just about 30 seconds left. I'm going to skip ahead to 214. Here we go.
With both of these products, like I said, they contain our humic technologies. And through multiple research trials that we've done, third-party trials, multi-year trials, we're seeing increased rooting, increased overall rooting depth, rooting amount, root hairs. So what that does is it creates a stronger plant if we're building that root system. And the root system is then better adapted to capture more nutrients within the soil. So we're building a healthier plant with these humic technologies and through our sustainability of actually using less nitrogen because of those technologies.
Okay, so that's all I had. So again, talking about roots. And I'm okay with roots. I don't have any problem with roots. But they need to be used as a means to an end. So if you're going to say roots result in a more healthy plant or more nitrogen uptake or more greening or more density, then show that. Don't be convinced by means to the end. It's not just with roots. It's not just with this product. I just mean in general, in life, but particularly in turf grass science. if someone says, well, this product's going to do this, well, ask yourself, is what they're saying a means to the end, or is it an end? Okay. Or is there some extremely strong relationship between the two? Okay. In those cases, then you might be, you know, you might be okay to at least consider those data. But otherwise, I'm not really concerned about it in a practical sense. I'm interested in it from a scientific perspective. Okay. I'm going to read through the chat one more time, and then I'm going to do some turf thoughts, and then we're going to play some music, and I'm going to head out. And don't forget Monday morning. So, Adam C. says, my elementary grade school scientific experiments are making volcanoes, made me ready for this day. Shangri-La-Di-Da. That might have been the funny name. I couldn't remember. There was another name. There's a guy named CVO Hobo that's fun to say. And maybe this was the name I remember too, Shangri-La-Di-Da. That's a fun name to say. Worms are the best for plant roots. So that's perhaps true. Okay. That's all I'm going to do. Thank you for the members. Don't forget to look for the channel, the link on Monday for the Monday morning show. I'll put that in the community tab for the members only. If you want to watch that, then become a member and you'll have access to that. Until then, I'll leave you with some turf thoughts. Remember, this actually happened to me in real life. It's not that funny, but it's verbatim exactly what happened. And until Monday morning, I hope everybody has a great weekend. Thanks so much for all your subscribers. Thanks for the members as well. I'm just amazed that the channel is doing as well as it's doing. And it's all thanks to you guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks. Have a great weekend, guys. See ya. Bye. And now, Turf Thoughts by Ken Corley. I asked the vice president of sales, what does this product do? He said, I don't know. I said, I don't think it is beneficial. He said, if all we sold were beneficial products, we would be out of business. I told him that seems deceptive. He replied, if you're going to be truthful, this company might not be the best fit for you.